Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello there, welcome to the show. It's brought to you in association with Levi Solicitors, who will offer you a 10% discount on your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. Dan here, along with Michael and Moscow White, Daniel Chapman. Also, hello. Do the thing, Michael. I know we've had a week off and we've been walking and stuff, which we're back from. Thank you, by the way, if you donated to the Andy's Man Club charity walk in memory of Gary Speed. We'll do a special show about that. We'll reflect on that properly in due course.
But before that, still donate anyway.
Yeah.
thesquareball.net/GarySpeed.
Yeah, nearly 60 grand. But we'll do the Will's probate conveyancing thing.
I had to say it to several people on the walk. People were asking for it. It's now become like my little...
It's your catchphrase, isn't it?
Weird catchphrase. So yes, if you want to get Will's probate and conveyancing, by all means do so from Levi Solicitors.
Before we get into this takeover special where we catch up on the latest news, do you want to explain why your voice is croaky?
The White Horse in Halifax seems to have ruined it. It was a karaoke thing that on the walk. It got out of hand and I've not been able to speak since.
I love the idea that karaoke could get out of hand.
I think normally, because was it Friday night with that? I think normally there's about six people in it and then like 40 Leeds fans turned up and it went on a bit. Mm. So yeah, since then, it's not really worked. This is the improved version as well. It was a lot worse before this. So sorry, everyone.
Quite a lot's happened since we were last here.
Feels like months since I've been in here because I did the a couple remotely because of my bad back. But here I am. It's nice. It's nice to be back in.
Levi Solicitors.
Yeah.
You did the catchphrase. You didn't do the...
Discounts. Is it still Phil Hay Monday Club or is that...
It's for a limited time.
For a limited time, yeah. Mm-hmm. 15% off your Will's probate conveyancing.
Yeah.
Got to teach you how to do it all again.
Unbelievably hard.
Levi's are going to be sending through some new stuff, by the way. So you possibly have some new stuff to talk about soon.
It's going to take all summer to learn that.
I was going
to
say, by the time you've learned it, it'll change again because you're fucking useless. shall we get into it then?
They shouldn't be allowed to change their
offer.
Their tagline, yeah. It won't be the same.
The pain is to carry whatever message they tell us.
Yeah, I think there'll be protests on the streets, won't they? Change it back. Change it back.
Indeed. So, news broke on Friday evening. Phil Hay with the scoop about the agreement between 49ers Enterprises and Ace Adventures, which was followed by a statement on the website shortly afterwards. Update, full stop. Leeds United can confirm an agreement has been reached between Ace Adventures and 49ers Enterprises for the purchase of the club. Both parties continue to work through the details and further updates will be provided soon. All our focus remains on a quick return to the Premier League. Thank you for your continued support. Marching on together. That's all really we have at this moment in time in terms of concrete facts. Those few paragraphs on the website, but a lot has been said, a lot's happened, a lot is about to change. Let's start with Andrea Radrazzani then as the jump off point for this. He's off, and how do you feel about the fact that he is off?
It's about time, isn't it? Probably he's overstayed by a year or two. I would say he had an opportunity to leave, not as a hero, because as an owner, are you ever really, unless you're bankrolling like billions of pounds into a team, but. Yeah, it was there for him to be our best chairman in a very long while. And as it is by the end, it's kind of like everyone's sick of him, which is, I guess, is a shame for him to a degree, but also, fuck him. Because he's a football club owner there to make money and, yeah, you know, what can you do?
Which he has done, just not as much as he thought he would and not as much as he would have done if he'd got out earlier. And I think he seems to have lost his... rag with it as well over the last year. I think my favourite part of the takeover announcement And I put the two screenshots in the Daily Email on Monday night. When it was first announced, it was just the Leeds United logo and the 49ers logo, which you can still see in the tweet, but then and was the same when you went through to the website. But they soon updated it. I'm not sure exactly when, but by next morning, the Ace Adventures logo had been put on there as well. So it fills me with sadness, actually, that somebody was spending their Friday night going, you haven't put my logo on the announcement. Get my logo on.
When you say somebody, have you got anybody in mind?
Well, somebody whose logo was not on the announcement. And that kind of the stuff with the message to The Athletic about the trying to get a loan on Leland Road to buy Sampdoria, where it's like, this is none of your business, not turning up at the last game. I think I get the feeling that Andrea Ratrizzani is kind of as sick of us as we are of him by this point. And his mistake in that sense is probably not recognising when the going was as good as it was going to get. Because you're right, a football club chairman is never the priority in a football fan's mind. Even
though he wanted to be.
Even though he wanted to be. And that's the thing. And even on promotion, and I can remember, we were talking about this in the run-up because it was always kind of his slight neediness was always kind of a present thing with replying to people on Twitter and saying that everything's unfair and stuff. That even upon promotion, there would still be people who would not give him the credit. And that's just the way football fans are. The credit, in the end, obviously goes to Marcelo Bielsa, genius, the players who played all the games, scored all the goals, kept all the clean sheets, did all that stuff. And if you're the chairman, if you're just the person writing the checks, hiring the people, you have to kind of develop this skin where the amount of praise you're ever going to get is always going to be limited by the fact that you're not the one kicking the ball in the net. But you are the one who, when the ball is not going into the net, everybody turns around and has a go at you. And that's just the way it is with football chairman. It seems to have found that increasingly difficult to cope with.
It's actually, on that, you're right. This is one of the few industries where the shit doesn't always roll downhill.
But what does that mean?
In the sense that normally it's the people, like managers pass shit onto their employees. And by that definition, the players would always take the blame. Now, the players did get a lot of flack towards the end, particularly in the bitterness that surrounded the end of the Spurs game. But really, it's all ended up at the boardroom, hasn't it?
Well,
it hasn't filtered down to necessarily
it does in the end. But if you go, we're talking about through the season. And if you go through the season, it was Jesse Marsh and then Gracia and then Allardyce who have to do two press conferences a week before and after every game, and then the interviews, and then the players have to front up. The players, you see Luke Ayling dragged out in front of the press to say, why did we lose today? And he's trying to come up with something, and then if he doesn't say the right things, everybody's having a go at him on Twitter. Pat Bamford's getting death threats, and people are talking about stabbing his dog. And meanwhile, Andrea Ratrizzani just goes, well, unless I decide to speak to who I want to speak to at a certain time for a proper sit-down interview, which I can vet, I'll say nothing. And then when I sell, I know he sold it for much less than he was going to, but I'll still walk away with, what's he made, like 70 million quid on what he paid for in the first place? So, and I did that in my last match report, did the maths, I think, the amount of money he hoped to make if we'd stayed up and he'd sold it for 500 million. Pat Bamford, who, if we assume he gets 100 grand a week, would have to play football for 80 years to make that much money. And yet football is actually built. It's all, the players are greedy. They don't care about the club. They don't put anything in. Pat Bamford's never had a prospect of walking away with 500 million quid. So in the end, Ratrizzani, although it does feel like his bottom lip is out, particularly when it's all like, this is none of your business. You're trying to make things not nice for me. My logo isn't on the announcement. Still goes away with the money. So how hurt is he and how bad should we feel for him? Not very. It's more his own recognition of what he gets from this is what he came in for, which is more money than he started with. And what he doesn't get from this is a load of people kissing his ass.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get to the money thing in a second because the figures might not be quite as much as the headlines would suggest. But I wanted to ask, first of all, you're talking there about him not getting it. Is that where he fell short? The fact that he just didn't get it really and understand his position in the world. He wanted more recognition than he was able. And ultimately, was it just about his lack of clout that saw him fail at Leeds, if you want to say fail, or bring things to a conclusion?
I mean, having spoken to Phil, he sort of indicates that he doesn't think Radrizzani's a massive football fan. Like he says he's nominally a Juventus fan, isn't he? But Phil says, like, well, if you try to speak to him about Juventus, it's not like he's got loads of memories to fall back on, and you can't speak to him for hours about Roberto Baggio or Gianluca Vialli or whoever.
So he's been in the corporate and hopping up with the champagne drinkers.
So he is a football fan, but maybe not in the way that the people who were, certainly the people who were going to Elland Road when he took over were, in the people who have been there for, you know, 12 years, whatever it was at that point, grizzled championship bastards, to use a phrase you used, that's what we all were for a time, isn't it? And I think him to turn up and expect people to love him was always going to be a bit of a stretch at that point. But I mean, I don't know if history will judge him differently, because ultimately, if we can bounce back next year, it's just a blip, isn't it? They're going down. But, you know, plenty of teams in the Premier League have had, like Newcastle have had a couple of years down there. Look where they are now. West Ham have had a couple of years where they've bounced around. So there's the potential for it to all work out fine for him in the end. But the way he's left this year with seeming to walk away from it and then try and get a bit of cash out at the end, it feels like he's veered towards Ken Bates at the very last minute, which was never, in fairness to him, that never felt like his model. His model was always that he was going to make money from this, but he was going to make money by making us better, whereas other owners, they were going to make money by just taking what was there.
Yeah, which we should say is the whole 49ers Enterprises model. The idea is that they will come in at this price and they will eventually sell at that price, and it'll be, if things work out, their interests will align with ours because we'll be a much better football club. But the money side of it is interesting in that, so the numbers quoted, don't forget he's getting 56% of that, and it's been reported, I think Phil's saying, like, it's £90 to £100 million that is the cash value of the shares. But there's going to be losses and debts that get removed from that as well. So the money that he actually gets is not going to be just the value of the shares. Stuff still has to come off. So if he paid, what, $45 million, he's only probably going to get tens of, I know this sounds sort of glib saying it, but tens of millions on top, which is a long way from
the numbers that have
been quoted. Yeah. But I mean, ultimately, he's a businessman and he wanted his money out of it, didn't he? That was the thing. He wanted his money out of it, and possibly explains why it's been so difficult and why it's dragged so long to get it over the line.
And in the end, it's what he was aiming for, was the kind of the comparison with a Bamford or their ilk. It should have been 500 million or 450 million if he'd sold at the right time. And it's funny because then that idea of coming in, building a club, leaving it better than you found it, making a profit, which is what 49ers Enterprises said they're going to do. He was very sensible about that for a long time. Like in the championship, I always thought, because he said he had a 5-year limit. He'd basically have 5 goals at getting promoted. And after that, he just admit he couldn't do it and sell. And he would take that loss. It felt like he'd put an amount of money in mind that he was prepared to lose because he can't make profit in the championship. So he's like, I've got 5 years, I've got this much money, let's see if that will get promoted. And if we do, fantastic. And I was kind of that, because it was the first semblance of a plan that anybody who owned Leeds had had since probably the turn of the century, or at least a plan that would help us. Because after Ridsdale, it was all kind of firefighting, trying to keep the club afloat. And then Bates had his own ideas that weren't necessarily aligned with ours. GFH, likewise. Cellino, I wonder if sometimes you have to remind him that he owned Leeds United. And then Radrizzani was the first person to come in and go like, right, no, 5 years, this amount of money, and then that's going to be my attempt. And then it all kind of got, after promotion, I think it all got quite vague, and I don't think they really knew what the next target was. There wasn't then another clear plan apart from the fact that we were already talking to Jesse Marsh, so they obviously thought he was going to be the person to take over from Bielsa and go forward. But it was always kind of, it was very much at odds, and it was at odds from the moment that 49ers Enterprises kind of bought half or up to half, because from then on you had the situation of Radrizzani saying, I think we'll build slowly, we'll be mid-table, move away from relegation, 2-3 seasons of safety, and then I want to get us into Europe. And his next target seemed to be qualification for Europe and then sell to a big boy, which again was like a reasonable target. But then, particularly once there was the deal in place, or the deal reported that 49ers had the end of this year, that they would trigger a buyout, it was then very difficult to listen to Radrizzani going like, well, you know, we want to grow slowly over the next 5 years. It's like, well, you're selling in a year. So that those things all got quite out of sync, and I think the clarity, and I think maybe he lost sight of what he was hoping to achieve, because there was no longer that sort of specific point of like plan one, get promoted. Plan two, what was plan two? At what point did he think in plan two, that's when I take a profit and leave?
But do you think
it seemed to be several different ideas, whether it was once he got into Europe or once 49ers bought him at this point or when?
Do you think it was perhaps that he just didn't realise that, or he wouldn't acknowledge that his wealth wasn't enough to kick us onto the level that we need, that i.e. they underestimated the strength of the Premier League and the resources that you need to make that sort of ascent? And then at some point in the last year or two, when we've been gurgling around the plug hole, to use a phrase I've used before, he's gone, oh, this is actually really hard, and takes tens and tens and tens of millions of pounds that I don't have or don't want to commit to this. And then he's gone, oh, yeah, it probably is time to sell.
Failures are very expensive as well in the Premier League. When you buy someone like Rutter, for example, we don't know what he's going to become. Don't be wrong. He could turn it around and be a good Premier League striker in a couple of years. But you, the amount you have to spend to hopefully get a good player and then a saleable player at the end of it is a hell of a lot. It's not like in the Championship where you're picking up Matt Clicks and Alioski's and people like that for a relatively low amount of money and they might push you on to the next level. It's really expensive. And I think the cumulative bill for all these players we've bought now, there's money due every year on them. And probably he's looking at that and thinking, can't necessarily afford this.
Particularly could be the thing that's tipped the balance.
I was going to say, yeah, if there's not the money there, particularly now we've gone down, if there's not the guaranteed money there from TV, all of a sudden committing £1 million a month looks pretty small if you're
Oh, 50 million in transfers this summer, don't we?
Exactly. Yeah. So there's all
and then the same again next summer.
A lot of money to go there. And I think maybe the year, well, I don't think there's maybe about it. I think the first year under Bielsa made them think this is easy. They were like, this is fine. We just give him these players. He improves them. We finish mid-table. It's great. We'll sell Rafinha next year. That'll be 60 million quid or whatever. The model continues. We can keep ticking these players over. Then when it started going wrong, all of a sudden the whole model falls apart, doesn't it? And the Leicester model becomes Leicester of this year, not Leicester of 3 years ago.
I think it's more that he did realise, and that's why the 49ers were there at all, because he realised he couldn't afford a Premier League club on his own. So he brings in wealthy investors to put in money alongside him, and with them there, it, essentially everything he put in is at least doubled. He's got people he can rely on to put money in while he doesn't. But the problem from that point is it then... he no longer owns the whole thing. He's got other people who are having a say, and I think
and want a say. Maybe if he doesn't want them to have as much of a say as they demand, it's difficult, isn't it? Yeah,
and he's always kind of worked this way through his sort of media broadcasting rights career. There were times when I think before he set up MP and Silver, where he was selling his business to somebody. He said, instead of giving me cash, bankroll me an office in the Far East and go into business with me, and together we will make more money. And this was the offer with 49ers, where it's like, bankroll me. I've run this club to this point. It's now worth this. If you start putting money in, I will make it really good, and then we'll both make lots of money. And he was talking about that when he was talking about moving on to other projects and expanding his empire of his network of clubs. So I'm talking to the 49ers about replicating this model in other places, and it sounds like there's an element of that in Sampdoria, where he said to QSI or wherever, it's like, look, I'll go in there, I'll buy it because it's cheap, and then you give me loads of money and I'll run it and I'll make it really good, and then we both profit. I think at Leeds, the running of things, and maybe the biggest factor in all of this rather than personality, is just not being able to put a winning team on the pitch and having these investors on your shoulder going, why are we getting relegated?
Which then goes back to the boardroom, doesn't it, and putting the relevant people in place. Because I was going to say, the interesting test of what Radrazzani perhaps failed to do will be shown by what the 49ers do now. So if they put in a far more robust, like, senior management structure, you know, back office team, whatever you want to call it, kind of the football department grows and has more people in it, rather than just doing exactly the same thing again, it would perhaps show where Radrazzani came up short by keeping, because what I'm saying is he basically concentrated a lot of power into the hands of Victor Orta, because he didn't know that much about football himself. So Orta's got the whole carte blanche approach to doing the football. So if it fails, it's a single point of failure, isn't it? Which is ultimately what happened this last season.
And it's felt like that at other levels as well. It feels like the media team's not very big and the commercial team's not very big. And pretty much everything seems to fall for like Angus Kinnear and James Mooney. Like they seem to be the kind of only known people. So everything just gets pushed towards them. And whether or not that's a workable structure at a Premier League team seems unlikely.
We have, yeah, anecdotal stuff, but like the media department, say at another club, might be like 12 people and they've got two or three of them dedicated to social media. And the whole thing's a huge operation, isn't it? And you do wonder how thinly it's been stretched over the course of the last 3 years, because they've made a concerted effort, I think, to invest on the pitch, which obviously hasn't really worked and has resulted in us going down, perhaps at the expense of some of the off-the-field stuff, which has remained championshipy in its scale, which is quite ironic given that we've obviously now gone down.
And that would be, yes, the new people with new money and possibly new ideas and new intentions, and whether there were things that they wanted to do, but when you're 46% owners, I mean, this is something the 49ers kind of have to quickly deal with, is that they've been almost half owners of everything that's happened. But
do you think that's their first challenge, Moscow? Or the biggest initial challenge? I mean, I know they've got stuff to do in terms of appointments, but in terms of how they look?
It's all equal challenges, and they've got to do it all at once. Get a good coach, get a good director of football, get good players, get promoted, and make us like you. Is all kind of a, you got to do all that at once. There's no patience. Nobody's going to go like, oh, you've done a bit of it. But I don't think it helps them that they're arriving having essentially kind of just sat back and let whatever happens happen. There'll be lots of reasons for that. Maybe they've been on there, they're supposed to have weekly meetings, aren't they, with Parag and Angus and Andrea and co. Maybe he's been the one screaming at them, going like, get rid of Jesse Marsh and get Eddie Gray in and play the kids. He might have been banging that drum in the background, but not been able to get anything changed on the ground. And, you know, it was interesting when Bielsa was sacked, and I think around the time Jesse Marsh was sacked, Pete Lowy, who is part of the 49ers Enterprises investment group, has a habit of kind of flying in, sitting in the director's box, and then flying out again and just being around. Certainly the transition from Bielsa to, no, it wasn't a transition, the sacking of Bielsa, when they sacked Bielsa. People keep saying like, oh, isn't it terrible that we sacked Bielsa? We didn't. They sacked Bielsa. Anyway. And then he was there at Jesse Marsh's first game as well. So he was there for that, but didn't say anything, and then went away. So there's a big question mark of like, what were you? Were you coming just to hang out? Were you wanted to see it done? Were you there saying, yes, you should do this, or no, you should not do that? Do you have to countersign something? So their involvement over the last however many years since they first invested is interesting. There's definitely a contrast with Pete Lowry in particular, who was on the, I look at it now as a turning point, and it felt like one at the time, but in a good way, the post-season, end of season awards after the West Brom game when 10,000 people got in, and then they had an award show with Ellie Goulding and the like. And Pete Lowry was there, and they broadcast it on Live Now. It was on Live Now. It was on Andrea Ratrizzani's streaming platform, and everybody was on great form, telling jokes, having drinks, and you're thinking...
Incredible Myanmar banter as well.
And you're thinking, these guys are going to take it forward and it could all be fun. But then for the bad times, we get the statement that we got after the Tottenham game, which nobody's put a name to. And I'm just going like, oh yeah, some people here are sorry, but we don't know who they are. And we're definitely not going to show you their faces or their names. So... There's a rebuilding, or not even a rebuilding, there's just a building of who are you, what have you been doing, why did we get relegated, what was your part in this, and what are you going to do about it?
We do know that Pete Lowy is going to be one of the more familiar faces in the 49ers Enterprises cabal. There's some venture capital money in there as well. We're seeing some high-profile like sports stars. We know perhaps that LL Cool J has been lurking around in the previous bunch of share buyouts. We saw Larry Nance Jr., break cover on this.
High profile sports stars that never heard of.
But if you know, if you like, state if you like that sort of thing.
Have you heard of the National Basketball Association?
Yes.
Moscow.
I believe the Nuggets won it.
He features in that.
I mean, I know that the Nuggets won it. I don't know who he is, but I don't, yeah. I'm sure he's very famous.
Who was your favourite Nugget?
The tall one.
Yeah.
You should have said chicken.
That scores all the baskets.
At that point, but anyway. So what do you make of it? I mean, like I was saying before, like, people often like conflate the ownership with the club itself, don't they? We saw that under Ken Bates. It was a line he trod very carefully, and he used often in his favour. To,
but if, I mean, he didn't know who owned Leeds United for a lot of the time. You've got to remember that when Ken Bates was
that
here.
That is true, Michael, yeah. But he used it to divide and conquer, didn't he? And people used to see that, like, for example, we spent a lot of time in the mag or whatever. When we started it, we took it on and did all this because we were a bit narked with what he was doing with the club. And people saw those attacks as being an attack on the club itself, and it never is, and it never was. But they are just custodians, and we need to remember that. And they may well come in and do some good things, but we have to remember their goal in this is ultimately profit and sale, albeit talking about a project before and maybe the loss of focus of one Moscow. This is perhaps like 8 to 10 years, and what should come out of it is hopefully a Premier League side first and foremost, but a Premier League side in an updated, modernised, enlarged stadium, and a Premier League side that's hopefully relatively stable in the top division as well.
The description of that relationship is why the relationship is the way it is, though, isn't it? Because essentially, an owner is just a means to an end for football fans. As soon as they cease to be useful in making your football team good, you're going to dislike them.
And all football teams in the pyramid can't be good at the once, can they? That's
no,
the thing.
No. There's a league table. It's like scum for years. I know there was the initial backlash about the Glazers, but it's become more of an issue the longer it's gone without them winning trophies. If Ferguson had stayed in charge, when as it was at the start, when they were still winning trophies, they were still buying good players, but he was actually putting them together into an all right team, no one would care. I know there's loads of debt and stuff loaded in the background, and I know it's the way they run it is kind of terrible. But if they're winning games, no one would actually care. And they'd probably have, you know, they're about to sell it for however many billions. And if the next owners also don't win the Premier League, people would be annoyed at that, at them as well. And it's I suppose it's acceptable when you know that people are only coming in to make money. I don't feel bad about calling them dickheads quite quickly, because you know that's their aim. So you're not here because you love us. You're here because you think there's an opportunity to resell us, and hopefully they will at some point, because they do so with us as a better team. But you know, that's the balance that any ownership has to find in it.
And there's a bit of a two-way balance with this as well, which is possibly new to us, although it's worth remembering that when Peter Ridsdale was in charge of us and we were floated on the stock exchange, all sorts of people owned Leeds United at that point. Peter Ridsdale didn't own us, he ran us. He had a lot of shares in us that he kept awarding to himself as a bonus, thinking that they were going to be worth plenty in the future. But
one for you, one for Peter, one for you.
Well, there were all sorts of American banks involved.
Sky TV had 9.9%.
Yep. So we're owned by a lot of different people at that point, and now we are also owned by a lot of different people, and that's where Parag Marathe has kind of a two-way relationship, because he's the custodian of Leeds United for Leeds United fans, but he is also the custodian of the fund for all these investors. And one of the ways that I think is worth remembering that these funds can work is that it's not a solid united block. There's three funds that we know of that have all paid in at different times. And when you see this, it's easier to see this work in some American, particularly with National Women's Super League, there's a lot of this going on there because it's new and the value is increasing all the time. Is that, say, Larry Nance, for example, has paid into this round of funding. If a year down the line, Leeds are worth a bit more because of things that have been going on, Larry Nance can just sell his bit, depending on how the fund exactly is set up. He can just go, I'm out of this, or he'll be like, I'm going to split my shareholding with someone else, or somebody else can buy in. And it's very fluid behind the fund. And you can, yes, the example from some of the American soccer leagues is they'll just announce so-and-so is new part owner, has just bought in to bring in. And they'll often say, like, oh yeah, I bring in particular expertise in, you know.
Well, property development, let's say, if somebody's got a finger in that particular pie.
So that would be one, or paint. Which particular aspects of property development do you know? I'm really good at paint.
But you're right.
So it can be quite small.
I was going to say you're right in that, well, because there's venture capital involved in it, and actually 49ers Enterprises is essentially a venture capital vehicle, and because they do venture capital stuff outside of their football and our football, they've invested in tech and all sorts of different things. I mean, like, for example, the app that runs their stadium was developed or funded or something along those lines by them, and they sort of sold it externally then, or bought it, whichever way it might be, it doesn't really, really matter. But yes, and VC tends to do rounds of funding, doesn't it? So it could be that they've said to this initial round of investors, which is presumably changed since we didn't stay up. You know, it's a different deal that's been put in place. You come in at this level, and then when we get back up, maybe we do another round of funding to try and push on in the Premier League.
And there's opportunities then to sell and say, I'll take my profit now and I'm going to nip out. Other people will come in. The other problem with, the other feature of venture capital is it does tend to come after a short while with a particular chant of, where's my profit? Where's my profit?
Well, that's the thing. Well, that's the important thing, isn't it? And that's where the devil is in the detail. And it's detail we may never know, but we have to trust that what they're saying and what is being said behind the scenes, which is that essentially this is a medium-term project of, let's say, 8 to 10 years, whereby they start now, they get us into the Premier League, they do the stadium, which costs however many hundreds of millions of pounds, and then eventually you're sat on a company that turns over X million, and then it's worth £1 billion, £1.5 billion, and that's their job done from their perspective, and then they can sell it to the next lunatic from the Middle East or whatever.
It's reassuring in a way, given the wilderness years we had, that those are the stakes now, because if we're just ticking along the championship without parachute payments, that money is never coming back. The amount of money that has gone in isn't able to be extracted in a Bates, Chelino, couple of million pounds a year kind of way, just up season ticket prices a bit and hope people still buy them. There's no possibility of that anymore for the amount of money that's gone in. There were years we turned over about £30 million in the championship with virtually no profit in every single year. So there's hopefully... It means those days are gone of being absolute cheap asses and trying to do everything that way.
The risk with that from a venture capital point of view is if there's no profit and no sign of growth, that they just sell.
Well, that's the point.
And then they take all their money with them and then you haven't got any money left.
Yeah, the point I was going to make actually on the previous point was that the devil and the detail and all that will be in the contractual terms between 49ers Enterprises and their investors. Do they have to leave it in for 5 years minimum or eight or whatever for the duration of it? You know, presumably there are no dividends that get drawn out of it until the point of sale, because that would make it a Glazers thing, and that's obviously what we don't want, because they're then stripping all the cash out. Doesn't sound like it. It sounds like it's a thing they're going to try and increase the value of, and you don't increase the value of it by stripping money out.
If they leave because it's not making the money, they also leave without their own money. That's the thing. When the stakes are low, when you've bought a club for not very much money, you've not essentially had to spend much to get out your bit, have you? And there's an opportunity to just take your sort of annual expenses, salaries, whatever you need out of it, like GFH, Chelino, all those people did.
It depends who's there and what funds are in the fund, because one of the features of a venture capital fund model is that you get 100 million, you buy into 10 different companies, 10 million, and if one of them succeeds, you make 200 million, and the other ones you just write off because you've made your money. And so it's kind of like a
percentages thing, isn't it?
It's a spread betting. Yeah, you spread yourself thinly because you only need one of them to make the big money, and the other ones basically can just go fuck themselves. And like that is, you see it happening to a lot of companies that they do just end up being told like, this, oh yeah, we've been, venture capital funding is going to take us to the next level. They're really invested in what we're doing, not just financially, but they align with our targets and we're going to grow together and it's going to be fantastic. But then that venture capital fund makes a killing on something else. It's got, all right, this isn't working. We haven't made a profit, so go fuck yourselves.
The important thing where this is concerned, though, is that we are a sporting organisation. And while the turnover is not massive compared to many, many industries, the profile of it is absolutely gigantic. And you would question the wisdom of people who own a sporting organisation in the form of the 49ers would just want to, you know, cut and run where Leeds United are concerned.
That's the point. It's not about the 49ers. It's about who has put money into the fund.
Yeah, but as we understand it, the fund is controlled by the 49ers. So if they've got autonomy over the spending of the fund, then
there's a bit of reputational damage.
That's exactly what I mean.
That's where Parag's dual role is reminiscent of Peter Ridsdale, because he has to answer the fans, but he also has to answer to the people who have invested in this fund. And if they're all pissed off, then he has a problem. And this is where Ridsdale backed himself into a corner and tried to talk his way out of it by saying, as a fan, I would not be selling Jonathan Woodgate, but I also have to answer to my shareholders and they want me to sell Jonathan Woodgate. So that was always his way around. And it's slightly different because we're not listed on a stock exchange, but there's a similar relationship there where it's got to keep the fans happy. It's also got to keep the investors happy. And if the investors start making demands, that's a problem in one direction. If the fans start making demands that the investors don't like, the investors making demands that the fans don't like. So Pragmarathi will be in the middle of that.
Spinning those plates, baby.
Yeah. And at the same time as running contracts and stuff for the 49ers, he's still heavily involved in the actual old gridiron lads and the American rugby team. And I think he got kicked out of the American cricket stuff. That all seems to be going...
Kicked out feels like a strong description. Should we say no longer involved?
Yeah, I mean, there was there was legal action. Like, everyone's throwing lawsuits around because of how that's been run. I think he was sort of elbowed out of it, but he's still kind of involved in bits of it, of how they get to cricket.
When you say American cricket, you do actually mean cricket, don't you?
Yes, it's not baseball.
It's not baseball.
Yeah, he was heavily involved in running the American Cricket Association, but that's been going wrong. So he's got to keep that running, and all the other things that 49ers Enterprises do, they've got to work. But then that's also where, you know, 49ers Enterprises, like, how many of those things do they just cut some of those off now? We're doing leads now, so he's got a lot on him, so he better be good, hadn't he?
Yes,
that's, and he does so. Sound from although the, you know, the American cricket thing is one thing, but his capabilities with 49ers, the gridiron team,
salary caps,
all that stuff, yeah, that he seems to be very good at, and the administration side of that, he seems to know what he's doing there.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Do you think that Leeds fans, more than anything, want capable people with their hand on the tiller? And what does that look like? I mean, it's obvious to say, buy some players, sort it all out. But what do they need to do from the off, in your opinion? Do you feel a sense of relief, first and foremost?
Yeah, just because it was not helping anyone that this was ticking along the whole time. It felt like there was no one, particularly in the final months of the season, when Reg Rezani's off trying to buy another club and not tweeting about Adam Forshaw. It feels like, I know, it felt like his mind was very much elsewhere, and he was still the man running it, and the man running the football side had left as well. So I just had an image of essentially Angus Kinnear rattling around Elland Road trying to do everything by himself, because he was like, well, no one's picking up. Like, I've not got anyone to speak to about football. The 49ers that don't own this thing. Reg Rezani's off somewhere else chatting to people about buying other clubs. Like, who? It's felt like we've been, as a club, fairly neglected for a while. And I suppose having someone coming in with a bit of renewed focus, because as well, it's a new thing for them. So you like to think that they're going to come in and be like, right, okay, immediately let's start and sorting stuff out. I know over years rot kind of kicks in places, and maybe that's why things need to refresh. Football teams are the same. Bielsa said it himself. You need to bring in new people to kind of give things a bit of fresh impetus. My hope is that a load of new people in the door will see them and go, right, okay, let's really get a hold of this. We can see that this bit's bad, this bit's bad, this bit's bad. They'll have a walk around the stadium and they'll say, why is the pie on the wall? Why is that toilet smashed to bits? Like, little bits like that you hope it might fix as well, and just give the whole place a little bit of a bit of a push, as truthfully we've had with previous ownerships. I mean, God, it lasted for like literally a week. But do you remember the GFH takeover and Luke Murphy scoring, and everything felt great for about 10 minutes, And then it's same when Radrazanic, I know it took a while for it to work, but it felt like when we got up, maybe we were fixed for a time, didn't it? With Bielsa and owners who seemed at least fairly competent compared to what had gone before them.
To draw parallels with those examples, or to compare them actually, do you look at the 49ers and think they've got a bit more gravitas and capability compared to those? Because I know with GFH, we were kind of like, well, this is all right.
It was just not Ken Bates is all anyone
Let's
thought.
Hope all these rumours of what they've been doing with property in the Middle East and how they treat their investors are a little bit of a red herring, and that they're actually quite capable. And you push all that to the side because what you see on the football pitch makes you feel all right for a bit. But looking at it objectively now, we've seen no evidence of what a football team under the sole control of the 49ers looks like just yet, and we will do in the coming months. But as you sit here today, do you have more confidence in it as an entity, as an organisation, as people who are going to be in charge of things for the next however many years?
Ish. I don't know. We need to see it, don't we? I know it's very much a physical manifestation of a sports team, but when you look, and I know it's not universally loved by the fans, but when you do like an online tour of the Levi's Stadium over there, that it's ridiculous. It's like a big shopping centre in parts. There's massive plazas within it with like restaurants and the club shop and all this different stuff. And you do look at it compared to Leeds United and you think, they surely know what they're doing on certain aspects of this. Like there are elements of running an American football team that are miles and miles ahead of where we are, and certainly miles ahead of anything you'll get in the championship.
Yeah, I put the case for wariness about the whole kind of funding model, but the 49ers Enterprises does feel like a needed influx of energy and potentially good energy as well, that everything that they know about running the 49ers should be applicable. And I can't wait for Elland Road to be a shopping mall. Because that's to immediately jump back to the risks and the wariness, that's something that's going to have to be quite carefully managed or not managed and just done, which is that negotiation of how Leeds United enters the modern world. And I can remember we were talking about Radovic Tani previously and saying that maybe one day we'll look back on this time and go, oh, it was pretty good when we were a bit shit, wasn't it? Because we'll miss the West Stand when it's gone and all those things that were nice when it's become, you know, glitzy and glamorous and it's full of tourists and all the kind of things that we don't like.
6,000 corporate seats in the middle tier, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's always been a very a conflicted aspiration that the Premier League creates new. And the moment we got promoted, every Leeds fan's like, oh, redevelop the stadium. Can't wait for release the designs. Show us the drawings. And you get excited about how Elland Road could be redeveloped. Then you remember it is going to be 6,000 corporate seats and you won't be able to afford to sit in any of them and you probably won't ever go in that place and it will change the atmosphere.
We've become like everyone else.
Exactly, and it will ruin it, but it's exactly what you want and it's the same.
It's funny talking about that conflict. First of all, I need to say there was a friend of mine who, when we were out on the charity walk, sent through a WhatsApp and I didn't read the message properly before looking at the image and it was, you can get AI to generate stuff now. And they'd got AI to generate a redeveloped Elland Road. And I looked at the photo and I went, what have they done? But it was just like this sort of, it can create kind of a Frankenstein's monster effect on certain things.
And more so than Elland Road already is.
Oh, it had a helipad on the south stand. Then the south stand was the biggest stand in the stadium. I was like, this doesn't look right. What have they done? And then I actually properly read the message and realised it. And there were two, like, I think it was like two revolving restaurants on top of almost a tiny West Stand. I was like, what have they done? The 49ers.
I would take this. This sounds great.
They're absolutely mad.
You get from Pontefract quicker, wouldn't you?
Exactly. In your helipad. Yeah, I've said this. I think I said it towards the end of the season. Like, I looked at Elland Road after one of the recent many home defeats, drove past it on the motorway and just went, oh, fuck off. Like, and hated it and resented it and wanted it all demolished and all the dust ground into the earth and set fire to and all the rest of it, scorched the earth. And yet you're right, though, there's a real duality about it. I look at it and I think we need to move on now from that form of the stadium. Because I look around it and when we were shit last season, I saw ghosts everywhere. Like the bit of the stadium that's 1950s. It was like, that's the John Charles stand.
What you get for going to games with Yvette Fielding.
And then, but looking at that, so the cop being a symbol of, you know, Reeves Leeds in the 70s. And then you've got Wilkinson's Leeds in the form of the East Stand. And I thought, you know, we were dead good players, John Charles and Billy Bremner, and it's like it's all just, we just need to move on from it.
But all that stuff,
not move on from it in the sense that we need to forget it. I mean, we obviously need to harness our I think, our history, but we are very much mired in our own history as a fan base, aren't we?
But didn't all that stuff sort of feel brilliant when we were winning games in the PL?
Well, that is the contradiction of it, is that we can, it felt so pure, didn't it? And it's like, we can still have this absolute shit all of a stadium that's got all this, these relics in it. And it's the winning and losing, really, that actually drives it all.
Yeah, I mean, I can, the thing is, you eventually fall behind financially, don't you, for not having that stuff. And the consequence of falling behind financially is...
Which you don't want to buy into emotionally, because you go, it's about money, yeah. I don't care, but we need to.
But you fall into a low division, and you become, as we were under Bates, as we were under GFH, under Chilino, like a shrinking and like ever more irrelevant club in that division. And you've seen the way the transformation in Leeds since Bielsa, that just the amount of Leeds shirts you see around, like there were genuinely not that many for a lot of years, were there? Whereas now everywhere you go, there's Leeds stuff, there's...
And people bitch and moan about what Adidas have designed, and you wonder how much that's been influenced by whoever at the club. But it has. You've seen a noticeable explosion. You notice them a lot more, don't you? And maybe if we can, by going down, shift the front of shirt sponsor, then all's the better. But so, you know, you're right. It is far more visible. You're right.
It's all quite mixed up in lots of ways, because that's hints at the bit of the lost opportunity that we had, kind of that incredible mix of who we were with Bielsa felt right. And so lightning in a bottle moment that it was all working. But now, essentially, you know, if we do come straight back up, then we look at Radric Čanić and say, what's his legacy? Well, he's turned us into Norwich. Like, cheers, mate. It's just what we always want, is to go up and down. Because we had that moment where Leeds historically with Yo-Yo pre-Reavy, but then Reavy took us up and we went stormed to the top of the first division and stayed there for a decade. Wilkinson took us back up and we stormed to the top of the first division. Didn't quite stay there the full decade, but we were there for 10 years, closer to the top than we were to the bottom for most of that time, got into Europe and all those kind of things. And then we came up with Bielsa and we stormed to ninth, but that's about as far as you can go in the Premier League at the moment. Thinking, oh, well, we're going to do what Brentford did, stay, like, move forward, we'll fast track a Brighton and we'll get straight into Europe and it's going to be fantastic. But instead, that moment was lost, and yeah, so we feel a little bit more like we've got that either West Brom or Norwich or one of the other teams that's going up and down all the time. But the other aspects about the stadium and the kind of the history and the crapness of it all that we love is to remember that if Don Revie had his way, West End... Johnny would be knighted, and West End and Lowfields, as was, both would have gone during his tenure, and they would have been replaced. He had planned out an Old Trafford style bowl where everything, all the stands at the same level and it goes round and it's a 60,000 capacity and as modern as it could be in the 1970s. And we got as far as that. We moved the cop back. We moved it north to make room for a bigger south stand. And you can see that if you imagine those two stands carrying around the whole stadium, that's what Don Revie was aiming for. So we kind of, it shouldn't even be how it is now if we'd done it properly in the 1970s. So there's a big missed opportunity there to not be in the state that it is in now. So when it comes to what it feels like, do you want a stadium that feels like something that our greatest manager didn't want and was trying to get rid of at the time? Or do you want to kind of bottle it and keep it the way it was when Don Revie used to look around and go, this is a bit shit, this, I'm going to knock it all down and build something better. But you build for the times, and I'm sure there would have been people in the 1970s going, how dare you get rid of this grassy hill that the Lowfields is built upon. I love this weird little shelf that nobody understands why it's here. That's my favourite place in the stadium. How dare you build something modern in 1975, and it'll be the same in 2035 when we finally get around to doing anything, when it's like, well, why does this have to be so modern? But it will be whatever is happening at the time is what we'll get. And the other thing I was going to say is the building and the influx of energy and the kind of the positive things that they can do is looking at Manchester City winning the Champions League and the treble. In fact, finally a good team has won the treble. I think it's about time there were some worthy treble winners, because I don't think anybody who did it before really deserved it, did they, in this country? Anyway, up your scum, it's funny. And proved a few things. Is like, okay, obviously the billions and the allegations of cheating, obviously those help. Having a lot of players from Yorkshire that is also a crucial factor, it seems, in success. But then what they did before Pep Guardiola was build a club with everything that he could possibly want to manage a football team, so that he was eventually, like, it was almost like stepping into a comfy pair of trousers for him. Although he always seems to wear trousers that are too tight. Him and Jesse Marsh could swap legs at some point. And but it was all built for him. It's like, we will build all this stuff behind the scenes, and then we will go and attract him like the dove from above, and he'll come and settle. And it'll all be, and he will be able to make it run. And whatever scale you're working at in terms of money, that's probably what you need to be looking at, is you can build all the stuff behind the scenes. You don't necessarily need to wait for the right manager, the right director of football, to be putting all these things in place.
You're talking infrastructure, baby.
Yeah, basically. So taking that that attitude, if you can't take the billions of very soundly acquired sponsorship money, that is definitely not contravened any rules or regulations, but just at whatever scale you can do it, build something that works so that it doesn't rely on a Victor Orta or Jesse Marsh, or you've got more of a chance of victory or of succeeding to some point if it's built around you. And that's what they can do, and that's what kind of the expertise that I would hope from the old ironing grids gives these guys. It's like, well,
build the whole thing, isn't it? It's build the whole organisation, and that's probably what we're lacking. It goes back to what I was saying before about maybe prioritising team building, but it was all concentrated through the prism of Victor Orta, wasn't it? So we'll wrap it up in a few minutes, but we are seeing the first rumbling of stuff happening, which is they seem to be on with the process of getting a new manager. Director of football, Webb, has been spoken about. So I know Farker, if you'd have looked at it maybe, say, 12 months ago, you would have thought that lacks ambition, but we're at a point surely now where we need to walk before we can run, and stop talking about Europe and just get back into the Premier League, first of all. Hey, Daniel.
The amount of tweets I've received in the last kind of week, people going, I really, really hope Farker gets it, just for
you.
Just to force Michael to do the voice every single week.
You're a bit croaky.
I'm really croaky.
So, Daniel Farker to Leeds, how do you think he feels about that, potentially?
I think we're a good appointment, yes. But yeah. Yes, I've booked a Caribbean cruise this summer, so maybe when I get back from that, I look at the job and speak to those American boys, and we'll see what we do. It's a great club. It's a great club, Leeds United. I've had success there as an away coach, and I loved it. It's a great atmosphere as a fan.
As for Farker working with Weber, makes sense on one level, doesn't it? I mean, you're talking about becoming Norwich there, Moscow.
Yes, it makes sense on one level, Rena. It doesn't make sense in the fact that I don't want Weber. I know he was highlighted recently because he did that ridiculous interview where he was talking about, somehow he wasn't able to give a diplomatic answer, or even just a boring answer about Norwich's women's team playing at Carrow Road. He decided it's like completely trash women's sport as an entity. And even though he's ostensibly as director of football at Norwich, probably in charge of it. But the thing was, that's the one that grabbed the headlines, but that's only the most recent stupid interview he's given at Norwich. There was one, I think it was when they were going down from the Premier League, and he was he just went on holiday that January. He said, we're not going to
play. Was it when climbing Everest or something?
Well, yeah, he decided at some point that his priority, rather than being director of football at Norwich, was these personal challenges of climbing mountains. I think he was doing them for charity, but certainly self-satisfaction was a great deal of it. He's like, I want to give myself these challenges. So he was doing that in the January transfer window when they were getting relegated. And he was like, well, we're not signing anybody. We've got absolutely no plans to do any players in or out. So there's no reason for me to be here. So I'm off for a month. I was like, that's just not even, even if that's what you're doing, don't tell people this. and so when you're talking about judgment,
it seems quite defensive, doesn't it?
Yeah. And when you're talking about judgment, you say, well, it should all be about the track record of signing players. And he signed good players for Norwich and got them to the Premier League and stuff. But judgment is also how you present yourself in public. And if you can't make the judgment about, should I tell them that I don't actually give a toss what happens in January and I'm just off? Or should I try and put something more diplomatic in place? Or should I just tell them that I think our own women's team is a load of rubbish and I don't understand why anybody would want to watch it and they shouldn't play at our stadium? Then Or should I just keep that quiet and just say, oh no, it was really positive that the women's team played at Carrow Road, and we're hoping that that's a real growth area for the sport, and we can perhaps build on the excitement of the Euros. And there's a lot of work to do to improve that area of the football club, but it seems to energise the people who enjoy it. And they're easy. But if you can't do those things, then I don't want that guy like going, oh, like signing players.
There does seem to be a lack of, I don't know whether it's emotional intelligence or self-awareness or maybe some combination of the two, whether he's just defensive about, you know, the fact that Norwich have yo-yoed a bit. Who knows? But
he's a personality. So the fact that I know those things about him already.
I was just going to say, that's the thing. It's like, if you do come in, it'd be great to not hear from him for a bit.
Yeah.
And I know we've moaned about the players being the ones to always front. Well, this is it. I was just going to say, the players having to front everything and you want to hear from the execs. We've probably swung the other way now, haven't we? We just need you to go about your jobs efficiently for a bit and not hear from you.
Or if you do hear from them, you want to hear from them about, you know, this is what we're doing to put things right. Not, actually, I think I'm just going to climb Everest if that's all right. That's what I mean by personality. Is you want somebody who speaks and just communicate, but maybe a drone.
It's kind of like a referee. You want them to go about their job quietly and efficiently and not spoil everything.
And not make lots of horrendous mistakes. And if they do make a mistake, explain it, but not in kind of Clattenburg terms.
So what you want is to just be perfect in our image.
Yeah.
Peter Walton, do you think that's going to be a good signing in the end? Well, yes, I think whatever the referee's decided, whatever the football director has decided, will be a good thing, yes. Thanks, Peter.
But I don't know how close we get to other clubs, directors of footballs and internal structures and such, but I know of at least two, and I know there's a lot of anger about Stuart Webber and what he's done at Norwich. And I know that a lot of other clubs have directors of football about whom I do not know of any anger. So I would favour somebody that I do not have any, like, that I don't already know that the fans of his last club didn't like him, would be a great start. It's a bit like the old...
like when we got Victor Ross from Borough, for example.
For example, and Shredder coming from... Where was Shredder coming from?
Ajax.
The sewers with the turtles.
Shredder from Ajax, where it's like the last thing we knew about him was the fans making huge banners showing him being killed in various ways. And we're like, well...
There's one saying he had an alien head as well.
Yeah, it's like he doesn't seem popular. What are the reasons why he's not popular? Whereas there are other managers available. Like, no, when Javier Gracia turned up, all the Watford fans were like, Troy Deeney forgot him. Troy Deeney did that interview where he was asked to name all the managers he played for at Watford. And if he got two, and one of them was Javi Gracia. And he said, oh, but I love Javi. I spoke to him last week. So anonymous, kind of goes under the radar and didn't do a very good job for us. But he's all right. Nobody minds Javi Gracia, do they? So those people are out there. It's a bit like old Stevie G and Scotty Parker. Other people. There's got to be others who are not Steve Gerrard.
There's a Villa podcast... I might have been a Villa fan. Either way, they were just sort of saying, I really hope he's not inflicted on you guys about Gerrard. Like, all right, really?
The club did seem keen on him at one point, didn't they? I'm sure in the Bielsa years.
Yeah, he was moved.
He was like a potential successor for Bielsa because we obviously knew that was and at some stage, but surely the Villa bit damages it considerably.
As well was always spoken about. And then he put himself, he had a great plan. He was saying everything last week. It's on TalkSport, basically saying everything you would do, I'd sign these players, I'd play two up front, I'd be attacking like Bielsa, but a bit more structured.
Question for you then, as we close this out, final point, would you prefer, if it is to be Rodgers or Farker, if they can persuade Rodgers, would you prefer him over Farker? Which one do you think?
I mean, Rodgers has got a bit more pedigree, hasn't he? And I think Rodgers has done it at clubs where there's a lot more pressure on him, because Norwich are a lovely bunch, aren't they? But that's the main thing people say about Norwich, it's just a lovely family club, really nice people there.
Just like Leeds.
Whereas, like, Liverpool and Celtic have got a good old share of bastards there, which I think is probably a far better comparison for Leeds. So I'd rather him. But Farker, equally, I don't think Farker would be a terrible appointment. He really, like, pissed this league twice with Norwich. And I know he then wasn't successful in the Premier League, but equally, they never really spent a lot, did they? It never felt like they came up and had a proper go at it. They never, like, came up and went, chucked 100 million.
Because the director of football's up a mountain.
Very true. Where he'll be again. But I think Farker wouldn't be the worst. And certainly when you look down the list and you see Gerrard, Scotty Parker, I think...
Give him his full name.
Scotty Parker.
Scott, yeah.
I mean, the bloody can he be eating alive at Elland Road, wouldn't he? The first goal goes in.
What the fucking hell is that?
What? Has Benitez got a job yet?
I'm not sure if he has.
I'm curious why he's dropped out of all the conversation. Maybe he said, never in a million years will I manage in Yorkshire. Yeah.
But it's an interesting thing, isn't it, that the whole kind of just gradually drifting out of people's consciousness in the way that, like, well, we've seen Big Sam. It's happened to him, hasn't it? He's become yesterday's man very, very quickly.
Well, Benitez, I mean, was spoken about a lot after Jesse Marsh. Mm. There's a lot of kind of get Benitez in and seemed like an almost a viable option, but now this time around.
I've just opened the betting. Farker, current favourite, but then Corberan, Rogers, Vieira, Potter, Gerrard are the other top names on there. What happened to
I thought Gerrard had taken a job.
He hasn't signed it yet. He's been seen in Saudi.
What's happened to Reggie Labrisse as well? He's on this list. I enjoyed his name.
I think they were also linked with taking a job as well. And who is it? Areola is supposed to be taking a job as well. I think Almeria was the latest rumour.
Almeria?
Yes, that's what I said. Identical. I came up against... Because Pablo Hernandez's next opponents in the playoffs to get back to the second division in Spain is my old friend's Alcaron. Right, I typed it wrong several times before. I'm sure I get this wrong sometimes. Is it Alcorcón? Alcorcón? There's another C in there.
Alcorcón.
Neil Warnock, 100-1.
He's agreed to stay on at Huddersfield.
100-1 for Leeds.
So he is going to be back at Elland Road next season, as long as it's a...
Is he staying on at Huddersfield?
Yeah, he says he's going to stick.
Bloody hell.
But there is today that I'm going to take over as well, so I don't know if somebody's going to come in and go, like, lads, honestly.
Nathan Jones and Frank Lampard, both 66-1.
Is Lee Bromby still director of football at Huddersfield? He knows the club, doesn't he? We could have the Bromby and Warnock dream team. Bring them in over as a combo.
Yeah, Benitez is on the list, but 40-1, so seems unlikely.
Yeah, there's a few others on there. Like, can they persuade Potter to drop down with Vieira? Would annoy Jesse Marsh because they were rivals in New York. Who was the other one? Corberan knows the club, doesn't he?
He knows the club.
We will wrap it up there. We will pick up this conversation and get into a bit more detail later on in the week when we speak to Phil, who is now, he's one of us now. We've taken him.
I don't know what makes you think he'll have any more detail than we've just done in the last hour.
But we need
hour.
To speak about the players as well. So we'll get to the players, who's staying, who's going, who's been making noise about going and who's been making noise about staying and somewhere in between. All that to discuss later in the week with Phil, and we will see you soon.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.